Hey, folks, this is Kevin. Just a few words before we start. Listen, when you want to do something for a friend, a family member, an employer, employee, when you want to maybe send flowers or chocolates or a gift, be sure to take advantage of our deal with proflowers.com. Just click on the microphone on the upper right-hand corner of the homepage and type in the offer code RISK. You'll be helping us. You'll be helping Risk when you do so. And the same goes for our deal with AdamandEve.com. You need condoms. You need lube. Whenever you need something in that whole bedroom arena, go to AdamandEve.com and be sure and use the offer code RISK. We have a fantastic deal with them, and you really should be taking advantage of it. Finally, postage rates are changing again, which means the post office is about to become even more crowded. That's why we at Risk and the Story Studio use Stamps.com. We can buy and print official U.S. postage right from our desks using our own computer and printers. Stamps.com always updates the postage rates for you automatically. And unlike those postage meter companies, Stamps.com never charges a fee to do it. So you always get the exact postage you need. You'll never have to go to the post office again. Now, right now, we have a special offer. When you use our promo code RISK, it's a no-risk trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and up to $55 free postage. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in RISK. Remember, you'll be helping us when you do that. That's Stamps.com. Enter RISK. Now, here's the show.
Extra
kids, this is Extra Risk, where we give you just a little bit more of the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison. This is a song called Scream and Shout Like Chicks on Speed by Distotech. And we're calling today's episode The Walking Wounded because we have two stories of people going through some rough rites of passage. The second story we'll hear will come from our dear friend, Dave Hill, brilliant comic, and he told an especially poignant story at a recent Risk Live show. You should definitely check out Dave's podcast of his own. It's called The Dave Hill Podcasting Incident. I had an absolute blast when I was a guest on Dave's show fairly recently. Go check out that episode of The Dave Hill Podcasting Incident. We talked about how I recently got tied up and tickle tortured by an acquaintance. Emphasis more on the torture part than the tickle part. But before we hear from Dave, we're going to hear from the charming young actress Candice Gardino. Candice has done some fabulous cabaret shows around town here in New York and multi-character solo shows. You can hear how good she is at impressions of people in this story. This is Candice Gardino live at the New York Risk Show. We call this one, Time You Know What It Tastes Like.
FCAA is for some militarization. Just another corporate-run organization.
Staten Island. I'd like to talk to you about Staten Island. It's a place where every boy's name is either Vinny, Anthony, or Joey, It's a place where the people say zork and coffee. And by people, I mean my mother. Staten Island is also known as the most popular area for garbage dumping. Staten Island is where all the women go to Antoinette's Tips, if I can remember that correctly, to get their very long acrylic nails put on so they can type just like that. Staten Island. Ah, I grew up there. Born and raised, actually. And I'm very proud of it. And I'd like to take you back for when I was about 13. Staten Island. Our Lady Help of Christians Grammar School. Yes, I went to a Catholic elementary school. What is it? Elementary, junior, high school, like all the levels, all Catholic all the time. Me, in a little plaid skirt with the pleats and the little white man tailor shirt and the buttons that, you know, like that tie that buttons, you feel like you're choking yourself to death. I wore those every day of my life. And the slutty girls, or I should say the stat rats, they hiked their skirts really, really high. Oh, yeah, stat rats are sluts. That's what we call them. So they would hike their skirts really, really high. I didn't because I was chubby, so I didn't feel that that would be a good idea. So here I am, 13, 7th grade, and Mrs. Conti is teaching some sort of social studies that I really never paid attention to. Mrs. Conti looked like Cher, but think Cher like Moonstruck 1984 with like the white streaks through her black frizzy hair. That's what she looked like. And I remember distinctly because I was daydreaming, not really paying attention to what's going on over here, and I'm staring the most beautiful man ever. And all of a sudden I hear, Candace, can you name the 5 Great Lakes? Shit. No. Clearly I couldn't because I wasn't paying attention, and I probably couldn't actually name the 5 Great Lakes right now if you asked me to. Honestly, I can't name them. But I remember when I was staring and, like, looking at Joey. That's his name. His name is Joey. He is, like, the hottest freaking man I've ever seen in my life. I was 13. I mean, my hormones were raging. And I'm staring at him and staring at him. You know why I loved him so much? Because he looked just like my celebrity crush. My celebrity crush. Oh, man, I would run home every day, and I'd turn on the television, and I would watch this man. Just how he handled those 3 little girls and... I just loved him and the cleaning products and the way his tall, slender body. I loved Danny Tanner. I loved Full House. I wanted Danny Tanner. And Joey. Joey looked just like Danny Tanner. I mean, everything about him. And he was the most popular guy at St. Joseph by the Sea and Our Lady Help of Christians. Every school knew him. And he was in my class. Joey. Bell rings. And what happens? I gather my books very quickly, and I like to hurry up, because if I can walk past him just in time to brush his shoulder, I can smell his cologne. CK1. It was so good. So here we go. I pack on my bags, and I brush past him, but this time I don't touch him, because all the freaking popular girls always gather around him. You know the popular girls. In Staten Island, they were blonde. They were thin, they never had to diet, and they never wore braces. I was the actual opposite of that. Yeah, those girls. They're talking to him. They're having a conversation with him. And he's listening because he's polite and sweet because his mommy raised him so great. And I love him. And all of a sudden, he sees me walk past him, and he turns. He actually comes over to me, and he says, "You want to play freeze tag in the woods?" Fuck yeah, I do. Actually, I said that in my head, and I stood there. My best friend goes, "Fucking answer." "Oh, yes, I'll meet you there after." So I go, put away my books, and I see all the popular kids going toward the woods. The woods were like, I don't know, a few feet away from the school, and my house was kind of near that too, so I always walked home. But this time, I walked to the woods with purpose. And here I am walking, and the whole entire time I'm saying to myself, "Don't be a fucking dork. Don't be a dork. Just play freeze tag good. Be a good athletic person. Don't be a dork. Don't be a dork." And we get to the woods, and all the popular guys are lined up, and all the popular girls are lined up. It was so Twilight, except for the whole, like, vampire and, like, you know, wolf thing. And we're in the forest. It was so sexy. And I stand at the end of the popular girl line, the only brunette, and here I am. And Joey, of course, says, We're going to start picking teams. I'm team captain. Raise your hands. Fuck. Okay. Here we go. Oh, Joey, pick me. Please pick me. Please pick me. Please pick me. I'll take Candace. Fuck. He picked me. Okay. He picked me. Like, that's a good thing. He, like, likes me, right? Okay. Now I can't fuck up the game. I mean, it's freeze tag, for Christ's sakes. I got this. Freeze tag. Here we go. Now, base, by the way, was this huge tree in the forest. It was, like, sunken in the back. But we all knew where the tree was, and I knew it was especially because it was, like, right behind my house. And that was base. Got it. Here we go. We're running, and I see base. Now, freaking other team is following me. They're right behind me. I feel them on my ass, and I also feel Joey looking at me. And he's like, baby, you suck, but don't give up. You can do it. Go to that tree. Got it. So here I go. I'm running, and I'm running towards the tree, and I'm running like all hell, and I put my hand out because I just want to touch the tree. Oh, dear God, and I'm almost there, and bang. I fell down a well. Literally, a well like baby Jessica in the 90s. So, let's discuss this well. First thing, I didn't even know there was a fucking well in Staten Island. There's no wells in Staten Island. And here I am, stuck in a well. It's dirty, it smells, and it's very Silence of the Lambs minus the poodle. And I swear to God, the whole time I kept thinking, am I down and he's up? And how did I get down here? And he leans over and looks down and he says, Candace, you all right? Yeah, I'm fine. It was really dirty. So here he goes. He sticks his hand down. He gets on his belly and he tries to grab my hand. And I try to reach up. My leg is stuck. My foot's stuck. Okay, I can't reach you. All right. What am I going to do, just sit here? Go get my mom. My house is the one behind the big tree. All right. So now Joey runs home to get my mom to tell him I fell in a well. Mrs. Gardino, your daughter fell down a well. A well? 911. Get me the fire department, the police, maybe even an ambulance. I don't know. She goes and gets the rosary beads from her bedroom, runs down the steps, and runs to the forest with Joey in her other hand. She's running, and she gets to the forest, and now she sees me down the well, and she says, Candace, are you all right? Mom, I'm okay. My leg is stuck. Now my tummy really hurts. Don't worry. I called everyone. Okay, and all of a sudden I hear, and I'm thinking, there's no way she called the ambulance or a fire department or anything like that. She wouldn't do that, right? Would she? All of a sudden you hear, she's over here! And you see all of the firemen running with their axes and shovels. The police pull up, and all the popular kids are now standing over the well, looking in and laughing. And they start digging because they can't reach. So they start digging down this well and digging and digging, and now the dirt is coming in this way and I'm in the center. The dirt's falling in. It's up to about here. My leg is stuck. I can't get out. The fireman gets finally down the well further enough that he's able to touch my hand, and he says, I'm going to pull and another guy's going to come down and get your foot out. Okay? And as the other guy comes down, he looks at my leg and he says, we have a bleeder! My leg was cut, apparently. So my mother takes out the rosary beads. She starts praying to God. She's saying every rosary known to man that a Catholic could possibly know. And they finally get me out of this well. They carry me out. And now I'm out of the forest. And as we turn to come out, there is every Staten Island person there. I mean, anyone you could possibly think of. My aunts, my uncle, Joey, and now all of the popular kids. Shit, they even called my uncle? Well, Lenny the ice cream guy showed up. I mean, anyone you could possibly think of is there, all of my neighbors. And the fireman carries me out. And he says, where's the truck? Where's the truck? And he puts me on the back of the truck. So I'm sitting on the back of the truck, and my mother's flipping out because there's blood everywhere. So now he rips open the bottom of my pants. Where's the blood on my leg? If it's not coming from my leg, then where is it coming from? Mom! My mother steps onto the fire truck. She turns around to the crowd. Everyone! Candace is just fine. She got her period. The crowd cheers. And one by one, each person is coming up to me, hugging me, shaking my hand. It's like the graduation song was playing in my voice. And all of a sudden, the firefighter comes over and he taps me on the back. Good job. And then through the crowd, I see a small woman coming through. It's my grandmother. And she has a cup of coffee in her hand. It's time you know what it tastes like. Welcome to womanhood, Candace. It fucking sucks. I didn't really know what, like, period was. I just knew it was bad. I knew, like, something was happening to me and that maybe I would die, or I don't know, maybe I was supposed to, like, produce a child. Like, I wasn't sure exactly what it was, but apparently it was kind of cool because, well, the next 2 weeks became a blur because I would receive cards in the mail and presents, and my mom would display the cards all over the mantle. Congratulations, welcome to womanhood. I got these really cool gifts. Like, I got these little, like, they, like, floated in the water. They look like little boats. I later found out they were pads, but I thought they were funny, and the tampon thing really, like, was a new experience. But all in all, I'd like to thank my mom, because I grew up thinking that every time someone got their period, we had to announce it and send cards and gifts to their house. So, thanks, Mom.
Thank you.
Are you all right? My leg is stuck. Now my tummy really hurts. Don't worry, I called everyone. The fire department, the police, maybe even an ambulance, I don't know.
Okay.
She's over here! She's over here! She's over here! She's over here!
Growing up, I always thought, my whole life really, I thought I had a really good understanding an appreciation of death. Like, if someone gets sick, or they get old, or they get hit by a bus, or they get accidentally thrown in a burlap sack and thrown over the side of a boat in the middle of the night or whatever, and they're dead. Like, that's it. Like, I was just like, well, that's just life, you know? And then there'd be a funeral and a wake and a reception, like, when that'd be kind of like this fun kind of victory lap, you know, after a hopefully nice, long and nice, you know, life. And, like, you know, as a kid, I would, a great grandparent or someone die, and I'd be like, oh, cool, like, we're gonna have sandwiches and cookies, this would be great. Like, I may have been like too accepting of death now that I think about it. But anyway, a couple years ago my mom died, and it was like a whole different story. Like, all of a sudden I was like, whoa, like, well, it was as if no one had ever died before in the history of time, and like the very concept of death didn't even exist. I just couldn't wrap my head around the fact that she died. Like, even not even like on a grief level. Like, it was just like it didn't compute. Like, and it didn't make any sense, because definitely the last couple, at least two or three times I saw my mom, she was so dead. Like, I touched her, I kissed her, you know, and she was just like the deadest lady you could ever imagine. She was so dead. Like, could not be debated. Super dead lady. But I could not, couldn't wrap my head around it. So I decided to tell myself that, you know, she just moved. And because I was like, that makes more sense to me. Like, she just moved, like, in the middle of the night. Like, my mom, you know, had a nice long life, and she lived in Cleveland the whole time. So it's like, you know, it's well within her rights to just pick up and move. Like, Paris, Paramus, wherever you want to go. Like, just get out of town for a little bit. But then I thought about it, like, and I was like, well, my mom was, like, a really nice lady. She wouldn't just pick up and move in the middle of the night and, like, leave all her stuff behind and leave my dad with all the house chores and, worst of all, make it so, like, I can't borrow money ever or anything. Like, there's no way she would do this. So eventually I had to just accept, like, I guess she's, you know, everyone's saying she's dead. I guess I'll just go with that thing that she's dead. And my mom was an Irish Catholic lady, so of course, like, she was super religious, and I know she believed in an afterlife. Like, I think she's, like, pretty much counting on it, and I know opinions vary on that, but I was like, for her sake, like, I know she wanted an afterlife, so I was like, then she gets an afterlife. So I was like, that's where my mom is. She's in the afterlife. And then once I thought that, I was like, well, you know, I jumped to the next logical conclusion that she could definitely see me all the time, like, no matter what I did. And as soon as you start thinking like that, I was like, my mom can see me. And I was like, oh my God, I do so much fucked up stuff. Like, pretty much everything I do is so fucked up all the time. And then I had to lay down some ground rules with my mom. And I was like, Mom, you can't, you know, be checking out everything. Like, no, you can't go in the bathroom. Aside from, like, the obvious stuff that goes on in there, like the gross stuff. Like, I have so many moisturizers and just, like, embarrassed. Just stuff straight men should not have. Like, and I'm like, that woman does not need to know about that. And then I live in a studio apartment, so, like, my bed takes up, like, half the place. And I'm like, so, all right, so if I'm in bed, she can't be seeing that. Like, not that I'm, like, just hanging and banging. I mean, I do all right. I do fine. I do great. but, you know, like pulling my boxers off in the middle of the night. It's just weird to have my ass hanging. Just stuff my mom shouldn't have to see, you know. And then the rest of my apartment is pretty much my desk, and that's where my computer is. So, no, you can't, you know, when I'm on my computer, she wouldn't understand the research that I do. So I was like, you can't, okay, no bathroom, no bed, no, whenever I'm at my desk. So it pretty much leaves, like, she can see me, like, putting on my shoes and, like, making spaghetti. And that stuff's adorable, don't get me wrong. But, like, I feel like my mom deserved more than that. So it's just, like, another thing I'm really frustrated about after she died. And then, you know, so she's gone, but my dad is still around. So as soon as my mom was gone, I was like, I have to really make the most of my time with my dad. Like, I can spend, you know, I miss my mom, but I can spend time with my dad. So I'm, like, really trying to up the ante on hanging out with him. And so, you know, we usually just hang out and drink coffee of various strengths and things and chat. And then we'll go out to eat. And, like, when my mom was alive, it'd always be like, she wouldn't want to go out to eat. She'd be like, let's just stay home. We'll boil something. But my dad, like, I can just be like, let's go out to eat. And be like, yeah, fuck yeah. He doesn't swear. He's a gentleman. But anyway, so we would go out. And my whole life, when we would go out to eat, like, it would never be like, never being concerned that I would actually pay for any of it. But somewhere along the line, as soon as my mom got sick with cancer a couple of years ago, right around then we would go out to eat. And, you know, like, in my 20s, I started to do where you, like, reach for your wallet, like right, like, I mean, my dad would be like, well, that's adorable. Like, you would, I might actually, like, I knew I had no money, but I would be like, oh, it's sweet that you pretended. And but then I remember we were out to dinner, and the check came, and I'm just sort of like, do that thing, Dad. So I took my wallet out just to see what would happen, and I'm waiting for him to just be like, oh, no, I got this one, and he didn't. And just to test him, I was like, let me get this one. And he's like, oh, okay. And I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? And I totally end up paying for dinner. I'm like, well, that was just a fluke. We go out again, and I pay for it again. It happens, you know, over and over, and I start to worry, and I call my siblings. I'm just like, oh, my God, like, you know, Dad's, you know, Mom's dying, and you know, he's going broke. Like, he can't even pay for Chinese food now. Like, what's going on? Like, is he okay? And my, you know, I'm talking to my brother, and he's like, yeah, he's fine. Like, that guy's loaded. He could live, like, another 50 years, and he's got a ton of money. So I'm like, God, this is even worse than I and expected. Like I realized the only reason he could possibly be letting me pay for dinner was to, like, show me some sort of respect or something. Like, he's, yeah, like, son, I know you're a grown man who can pay for P.F. Chang's now. And I was like, that's what this is about, Dad. I do not need this kind of respect from you. So, needless to say, so my mom's dead, and my dad is bleeding me dry, so I'm like, Oh, it's like I'm, you know, getting like really depressed, and I was trying everything. It's like drinking a lot, prescriptions, therapy, everything. And the one thing that worked was running, and it's the most embarrassing. It's the worst. I hate run. It's the fucking worst. Does anyone run here? No, it's horrible, right? I mean, everything. I hate the time that it takes. I hate the outfits. I hate the running part is the worst. Where you actually, that's so bad. And even worse is like the other runners when you're running along and they see you from far away and they're like, hey, we're both running. Fuck you. Like, I'm miserable. I don't want to connect with you. So anyway, shortly after my mom died, I'm like out running in Cleveland, where I'm from. And thank you. And it's freezing out. And I was like running so far and like it's getting like, and it's the dead of winter. And I start to think like, I can't feel my penis anymore. Like, I think I might be getting, like my testicles had jumped up into my body like long ago during the run. And I was like, oh man. Like my penis is just this little nub, a cashew-like nub, just frozen. I was like, I think I might get frostbite in my penis. I don't want this to happen, you know? And I start to panic, and I'm too far from home to just turn it around. So I start, like, fluffing myself, you know, as I'm running. And then I start to think, like, who can see me, like, right now? Like, what's going on? You know, like people, I'm assuming people are, like, looking out their front window or, like, cars. So I come up with this, like, mathematical equation, like, how many, you know, every 30 seconds or so I can really try to revive my genitals. And, you know, I'm like, this is about survival. And so I didn't want anyone to really see that I was basically masturbating running down a main road in Cleveland. But then it occurred to me, like, the one person that could see all of it was my mother. And I was like, oh, fuck, Mom, you have a tough choice to make right now. Because, you know, like, whether you want, you know, your son to be masturbating publicly on the streets of your hometown, or you want me to like have it be awkward every time I go in the showers for the rest of my life, or whatever. So I'm like, Mom, you gotta let me have this one. I'd like to think she said yes. But anyways, aside from all that, you know, the bigger thing is that I just miss her. Like, you know, I sort of wish death came with a sort of exit interview where you could like kind of talk it over. Like I just want my mom to know that everything's okay and like I'm not gonna become a call girl unless I want or whatever. You know, I just didn't want her to worry because my whole life I always did all this stuff, you know, writing and comedy and music and just stuff that doesn't guarantee, stuff that makes parents worry, you know? And it, like, I want my mom to get it, and I want her to be proud of me. And, you know, I spent my whole life, especially my adult life, just being really frustrated. I'm like, what's her problem, you know? And I remember when I was, like, 15, sneaking down into the kitchen, like, in the middle of the night and to bake cookies. And then, like, the door, it's, like, midnight, and my mom's like, oh, shit, like, I'm busted at, like, making cookies. And she was like, no, we're cool. She was just like, basically, you give me some cookies, and I won't tell anyone else in the house there's cookies. So I'm like, all right, shut the fucking door. I could swear in front of her. And so we're sitting down, and we're chatting, just, you know, mostly cookie talk, like how good they are, like, you know, right when they're out of the oven, and how good they are, or like after a while, like a little burn, not quite cooked, you know, like cookie talk. And as we're talking, like, I realize, I'm like, holy shit, like, this lady isn't just my mom, she's like a person, and like, I think we might even be friends, like, this is so gross. But, like, you know, I realized things would never be the same. Like, we were, you know, we had always been friends. We'd be friends for life. And it was, like, you know, kind of a nice realization. But, you know, for a 15-year-old, it's a bit horrifying. And in the last few months of my mom's life, when she was too sick to be at home, she was in the hospital, I would go, you know, I'd bring her, like, a bag of cookies every day. Do you guys know Tate's Cookies? It's the best cookie, if you know them. They're the best. I only mention it in the podcast because I'm hoping for you know, something will happen. No, but they're the best cookies. No, they are. So I'd bring them, and every, you know, I would just let her eat as many, you know, we just eat as many as we could, because I knew no matter how sick she got, you know, as long as she could eat cookies, like, she was still my mom. Like, that's still, you know, even if she can barely talk, as long as she's like throwing down with the cookies, I'm like, that's totally her. So, you know, and the doctors would be like, no, you can, you know, just give her like one cookie a day, that's cool. But I would, you know, I was like, well, the cookie's going to make her sick? They're going to kill her? And they'd be like, no, no, the cancer's got that covered. It just, you know, probably, you know, that's not good. I guess even when you're dying, you shouldn't eat too many cookies. I disagree. So, so you know, we would just eat as many cookies as we could. And one of the last times, you know, I spent with her, I was in the hospital with her, and it was getting late, and the rest of my family had gone home, and I was helping her eat her hospital food, just like whatever steamed bullshit they bring you. And then I was like, oh, it's cookie time. And we break out the cookies and we're eating these cookies and everything. And as we're sitting there, like, I'm like, oh shit. Like, you know, we're just, you know, she can barely talk at this point. And I realized, like, oh my God, like, this is, like, I've spent my whole life being like, what's her problem? Why didn't she get me? Why is she, like, always worried about what I'm doing? And then it hit me. I'm like, she never had a problem with me. She was always proud of me. Like, this is, like, my own hang-up. Like, she doesn't give a fuck. Like, she just wants to hang out and eat cookies with me. And, like, and then I was like, that's what this is, like, life is pretty much about. It's just kind of hanging out with people you love and eating cookies. Doesn't have to be cookies. But, And then, so, you know, it's getting late, and she was ready to conk out and everything, and so I was like, oh, I'll put the cookies away, and I'm putting my coat on, and I, you know, I look at her, and you know, I say, oh, Mom, you know, are you sick of me? And she says, yeah, I'm sick of you. And then, you know, she sort of looks at me, and sort of with perfect timing, then she just smiles a little bit and says, I love you. And those ended up, you know, I couldn't have planned this in a million years, and or anything like that, but the cookies that night ended up being the last thing she ever ate, and those, you know, those words were the last words she ever said to me. And it just, you know, I realized, like, sometimes in the darkest moment, you can just, you know, bright light will just blind the fuck out of you. So I was like, holy shit. Anyway, call your mother.
Thank you. For this episode, this is a song called All I Want by Codaline behind me now. And that was Dave Hill at the Risk Live Show in New York with a story he calls Bunny. Well, folks, I have to be frank with you. We've had quite a nerve-wracking beginning to 2013. The Risk staff has been doing a lot of talking about whether or not we are going to last through 2013, because we are hurting for money bad. We are listener supported. Now, we're going to do every damn thing in our power to keep this show running. but we do have to appeal to you for help. If there are any listeners out there who happen to know or have any connection to a philanthropist, someone who would be in the position to make a major donation to us and to our parent network, MaximumFun.org, please write to me directly at kevin@risk-show.com. And for all the rest of you, you can become a member at MaximumFun.org. Just go to MaximumFun.org/donate. You can also just make a one-time donation there and earmark Risk. We really do need your support to keep things running smoothly here. We've got a ton of amazing things in the works right now. Stuff that's coming right down the pike. So be assured, there's a lot of fun to come. But I can't emphasize enough, we need your support. North Carolina, we are coming your way on February 9th. We are at the Arts Center Main Stage in Carrboro, San Francisco. We are coming your way on February 2nd with Greg Proops, Glenn Wool, and Chris Garcia. Los Angeles, on January 24th, we'll have Johnny McGovern, Sean Patton, and author Chris Ryan. And on that same night, January 24th, in New York, we'll have H. Allen Scott, Dale Soulis, Guy Branum, and more. Whenever you want to find out where the Risk Live Show is happening next and how to get tickets, go to risk-show.com/tour. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Call your mother.